Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of the inflation syndrome, which way is up? I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. To elaborate on the subject, my panelists are Robert Jacobs, a mortgage loan officer at Cameron Brown Mortgage Bankers, James Hayner, assistant professor of economics at George Mason University, and Dr. Howard Block, professor of economics. Exactly, what is inflation?
Inflation, to put it simply, is defined as a rise in the general price level. On a perhaps more meaningful level, inflation is the result of an interaction between two variables, the rate of growth of the money supply and the rate of growth of goods and services. If the government expands the money supply, and only the government in our society can make money, if the government expands the money supply at a rate more rapid than the economy is able to increase its output of goods and services, there is no alternative for prices except to rise.
Is there anything that can be done about the money supply?
There is no law from on high that says the government must increase the money supply at any given rate or that it must increase the money supply at all. Politicians choose to raise the money supply essentially to fund their own spending. There are many constituent groups in our society, all of them want more goodies from the government. To provide these goodies, which are viewed by each particular group probably as their right, but to provide these various services, these various benefits, etc., the government must pay for them. They could borrow the money from the private sector. They choose, however, partly to avoid driving interest rates to even higher levels, to create the money.
Mr. Jacobs, based on Dr. Block's explanation, how does this actually affect the mortgage and banking industry?
Basically, there's not enough money to go around, and the feds have restricted funds to not just our industry, but all banks, not just mortgage bankers. With this, it creates a higher price and thus higher interest rate.
What sort of interest rates are we talking about currently?
Conventionally, we're talking around 14.75% to 15.375%, and FHA VA, i.e. the government loans, are running 13.5% and 14%.
Has that actually hurt the market?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. It basically decreases the will to buy, because the individual who purchases a home expects to move up in life, not laterally or down. For the most part, they expect to move up. And with high interest rate, the individual can qualify for less even though his income is steady.
So many people who reside in this particular metropolitan Washington area wonder whether or not this market is exceptional or unique.
Oh, it is, without a doubt. We function off of the federal government, and we go along at a very small rate of pace as far as increase in housing, basically because of the federal government's steady employment. They're not like B.F. Goodrich or any other town that exists off of a single company, and if they happen to go broke, all the real estate devalues because there's nobody to purchase the real estate. This is a very unique area in that we are, and it's been said, inflation-proof, however, or recession-proof, excuse me. And it's a very unique area, and it's unlike probably most any other part of the country.
Professor Hayner, we've recently had a change in administration, or I should say that change in administration is taking place now. How is that going to actually affect the economy?
Well, I hate to be pessimistic. What I think we've done is gone from a Democratic regime to a Republican machine. And the politicians take advantage of the fact that the average person doesn't understand that very simple relationship that Howard outlined between the quantity of money and the rate of real growth in the economy. And if the quantity of money grows faster, we're going to have inflation. It all reminds me of a society in Australia called the Walberry. The Walberry don't associate sex with having babies because there happens to be a 9-month lag between the one and the other. And these days, whenever the government increases the money stock today, they are indeed sowing the seed of inflation that we won't see between 9 and 12 months. So when it actually occurs, the politicians can turn around and blame it on anything from greedy Arabs to nasty businessmen to grasping labor unions, and it all washes. Just like I imagine men in the Walberry society, whenever their girlfriend talks about the baby, he says, well, yes, but didn't I see you down there by Fertility Rock 2 weeks ago? That probably was what caused it. And as long as people believe that the stork brings inflation and not the Fed, those stories are going to continue to be told.
So many people insist that inflation cannot be cured. Is that a myth?
Well, I think it's a myth, but it's so convenient for the politicians to inflate. Just let me give you an example. Everybody likes to have government spending. Nobody wants to have their own pet project cut. And so through coalition building, we have everybody getting pretty much what they want. And this gives us deficits because no politician likes to raise taxes. Well, the government has to pay that deficit. Where does that money come from? And the money basically has come over the last 12 to 15 years from the government monetizing that debt. Now, let's say I go home at night and I look at my bills, and I have a $1,200 American Express bill, a $2,000 MasterCharge bill, my cash-o-matic at the bank is overdrawn, and I say to myself, I'm in a bad shape, I have a big deficit here. And then it occurs to me to go down and get a Xerox machine and Xerox off $20 bills in color, use that money to pay off my debts. If I do it, the government calls it counterfeiting. If they do the very same thing by monetizing the debt, they call it monetizing the debt. What they do is the Treasury issues debt on paper, paper debt, sells it to the Federal Reserve for newly printed money. The Fed puts that money into circulation, and every dollar that they put in circulation in that manner makes the one in your pocket worth that much less.
Well, I would go along with Professor Hainer on that and emphasize what he hinted at earlier, that there are many excuses for inflation. In our country, we blame it sometimes on greedy bankers, sometimes on greedy Arabs, sometimes on the oil companies. There always are convenient scapegoats. And this has been true throughout history. Inflation has been a fact of human life, on and off, as far back as recorded history goes. And as far back as recorded history goes, the politicians, the kings, the emperors have had convenient excuses. It's never been the fault of the government. It's been the fault of greedy speculators, of greedy merchants, of unfortunate weather conditions, of wars. Various other excuses have been found. So if you look throughout history, you would come up with a long list of things that may cause inflation. But there's one common factor. Every inflation throughout history has had this one common factor, i.e., the money supply has grown more rapidly than the output of goods and services. The politicians, the kings, the emperors, who have control of the money supply, overlook this fact and look for other scapegoats such as merchants, oil companies, bankers, etc. But it's a problem created by the government, and it can be solved only by the government. Inflation will slow down when we slow down the rate of creation of money.
Mr. Jacobs, if we started to take retrospect over the past 10 to 12 years, what would we see when we're looking at interest rates?
I might point out, since 1958, there have been 41 government rate changes up to date, which is it's not normal. The fact of the matter is that there should be maybe one or two during a year. It's been highly irregular this last year. We've had 9 government rate changes in the mortgage market. And what this basically does to the consumer is he can come in and apply for a mortgage, and it takes about 60 days to process a case. The individual goes to close, and he doesn't know what interest rate he's going to close at. Okay, he may not qualify at all. Okay, he may apply at 11.5 and close at 13. He must close at the prevailing rate.
So no one's giving an advance guarantee anymore.
Well, we really can as a bank. This all gets into the buying and selling of funds, and unfortunately, with a government loan, you must close at the prevailing rate. However, a conventional market is different, and it's a little bit indicative in that it moves a lot faster. So if you can understand that we've had 21 rate changes in the last 4 years, and we've had 9 in the last year, you can see how it reflects upon the economy. Nobody knows really where it's going. And in the short term, we tend to be a little bit pessimistic. In the long term, I think that we're all gearing up for a surge in the market.
There is still a public that continues to buy, however. And I'm wondering, is the little man really the person who's being affected by all of this?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. The individual who wants to trade up on equity, which is about 90% of your clientele, in the moving of mortgages, we tend to see that the average individual just cannot afford to buy. I mean, somebody that makes $60,000 can only afford an $80,000 mortgage at 14.75%. At 14.75%, just principal and interest alone would be somewhere around $1,000 a month. It's outrageous, and unfortunately, those people who have to move now must be sacrificed by the high interest rates. However, we expect it to be a short-term thing. We expect to be out of this, or just starting to get out of it, in about the middle of 81. We expect to see a turnaround in the money market. Within a year, we should be seeing 11.5% interest on the government mortgages, and I would hope to see our investors, the investors create the conventional money to follow suit, typically 0.5% to 1% above, given the market at the time.
Well, if you believe that, I hope you're out buying long-term bonds on margin.
Well, I'm not out buying long-term bonds on margin. I can only tell you that I predict the Jenny Mae Securities and the Fannie Mae auctions to react, hopefully, with a growth in the market. The market has just been suppressed for an awful long time. We're coming up on almost 2 years of increased inflation, and it just cannot sustain itself very much longer. Builders are going to start going out of business. Realtors,
foreclosures.
Well, they are, and it's not just going to be builders and realtors. It's going to be people that carry inventories, like car dealers and retail people, who have to borrow at prime and two. They just cannot sustain 18.5% in 2 points, which is 20.25%. It's got to turn around, and I might add that interest rates can come down just as fast as they went up, and we are all looking at this point in time for the peak to see the market return.
Talking about crystal balls, what do the economists predict for the future?
Well, he who lives by the crystal ball is going to have to learn how to eat ground glass. I really don't know what to predict except continuing inflation. I don't think inflation will end until the American public not only demands an end to it, because I think they pretty clearly demanded an end to it with the election of Ronald Reagan, but I don't think they're going to actually get it until they know where it comes from, and it's such a simple proposition. But John Maynard Keynes, who was a famous name in economics, once said that the relationship between the money supply and inflation is such a simple proposition, and yet it's ironic that only one person in a million truly understands it. And I think until we get 51% of the people at least to understand where it comes from, and not to accept this canard that the government keeps propagating, that the stork brings us inflation, I don't think we have very much chance in getting rid of it until the people know exactly where it comes from.
I think we can look a little more closely at the statements that Mr. Jacobs made. High interest rates indeed do have the effect of reducing people's abilities to buy homes, cars, etc. But really, that's the purpose of the high interest rates. The Federal Reserve has begun to slow down the growth of the money supply. Actually, they talk more about slowing it down than they actually do slow it down. There's more rhetoric than substance there. But they have at least moderated somewhat the rate of growth of the money supply. Among other things, that's forced the interest rates up. The higher interest rates will have the effect of reducing demand for housing, cars, etc. Now, the major question we face, and I would go along with Professor Hainer on this, is whose consumption of resources, of goods and services, will be cut down? Will it be that of individuals? Will people have fewer homes, cars, etc.? Or will we cut down the resources that are devoted to the governmental sector?
What can the general public do at this point to help the problem?
Well, one thing they can do is respond to the market signals being sent out by the Fed. Howard's right when he talks about the Fed moderating the rate of growth of the money supply, but moderating is not slowing it down to the point where inflation would go away within the foreseeable future. The public can bring lower prices about faster by simply refusing to pay the higher prices. If you don't like the price of gasoline, don't buy as much. And if everybody does that, the price of gasoline in relative terms will fall as it has.
One thing that the people could consume less of or demand to be given less of is government goods and services.
Amen.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.